KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint. K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove. KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay. KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass. And KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. U.S. lawmakers are considering legislation which would elevate the Indian Health Service Director position to Assistant Secretary for Indian Health within the Department of Health and Human Services. The bill was heard this week in the House Committee on Natural Resources, Subcommittee on Indian and Insular Affairs. Interim National Indian Health Board CEO A.C. Locklear testified in support of the Stronger Engagement for Indian Health Needs Act. The Assistant Secretary would have more privileges within the agency, working to strengthen advocacy and policies and prioritize funding for Indian health care. Locklear says elevating the position would ensure direct tribal representation at the highest levels of government.
Just being able to be that principal advisor across the board. Directors are typically directed to execute a specific program, such as direct services. The assistant secretary would be able to have more strategy behind a lot of their work and advising the secretary.
The position is supported by Health Secretary nominee Robert F. Kennedy Jr. During his confirmation hearing, Kennedy said he'd bring in a Native person at the assistant secretary level. This week, U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, chair of the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, sent a letter to the Office of Management and Budget. She's seeking to ensure tribes and tribal programs and the federal funding they receive are not affected by the president's orders and policies. Murkowski said any pauses or elimination of tribal programs would undermine the United States' trust responsibility. She asked OMB to take action now to reaffirm the unique treatment, programs, and services to tribes based on their political and legal status. A program that has supported thousands of Alaska students from across the state recently celebrated its 30th anniversary. KNBA's Alaska Desk reporter Alona Knighton has more.
Alaska Native Science and Engineering program, known as ANSEP, began 30 years ago to help one Indigenous student get a scholarship. Since then, ANSEP has helped more than 2,500 Alaskans from all over the state get their footing in science, engineering, and business. Hundreds of people turned out at the Denaina Civic and Convention Center to celebrate the program and its success stories. One of the main features of the program is that it allows middle and high school students to take college classes. The shortcut helps families save money. ANSEP proponents say it can also be more cost-effective for schools and governments. Isabella January, a high school senior in Bethel, is one of the ANSEP students. January plans to attend the School of Medicine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City in the fall.
I plan to specialize in either neurosurgery or emergency medicine, and I will be receiving my MD within the next 4 years. And it is all thanks to ANSEP for allowing me to get a jump start in my career.
Herb Schroeder founded the program. He says that the idea behind ANSEP was to grow the number of Alaska Native professionals in the fields like fish and wildlife management, healthcare, and education. Schroeder says that early on, some educators did not believe Indigenous students were able to succeed academically or professionally.
For the students, thank you for inspiring us every single day by doing what was once considered impossible. It's the honor of my life to have helped kick down the walls of ignorance that denied opportunity to so many for so long.
ANSEP started as an opportunity for Alaska Native students, but has expanded to include applicants of all ethnicities. In Anchorage, I am Alona Knighton.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Skugtash. For more than 40 years, Ramona Farms has revived ancient traditional foods, tepary beans, pinoli, polentas, and more, all from store.ramonafarms.com. Ramona Farms supports this show. Domien. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for over 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
When something happens here in small communities, in the small region that we live in, it hits home. It hits home for everybody.
Searchers find no survivors on a Bering Air flight that crashed yesterday near Nome. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, February 7th. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, the Alaska Senate joins the House in urging President Trump to keep the name of Alaska's highest peak.
The Athabascan people have lived in the interior for thousands of years, and for thousands of years have embraced Denali as its proper name.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you involved in subsistence hunting, fishing, and trapping? The Federal Subsistence Board is seeking young leaders to fill non-voting seats on the Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Interested Alaska residents ages 18 to 25 are to submit a letter of interest, including two references by Sunday, February 16, 2025. More information at 907-444-1376. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
No survivors were found on board the Bering airplane that went missing in the Nome area Thursday. Searchers discovered the wreckage on the sea ice near Nome today. One pilot and nine passengers were on the flight. The plane was en route from Unalakleet to Nome when it disappeared yesterday afternoon. KNOM's Ben Townsend has been covering the missing flight and joins us now. Hi, Ben.
Hey.
So what exactly do we know about the circumstances around this crash?
Yeah, so yesterday at about 3:18, a Bering Air Cessna caravan stopped transmitting its location. The exact reason why it stopped transmitting is not really known at this time, but Coast Guard officials have said that their radar analysis reveals that the aircraft experienced an event that caused them to experience a, quote, rapid loss in elevation and a rapid loss in speed. So our understanding is that the event happened while the aircraft was flying just over 3,000 feet, somewhere above the Norden Sound, and that's made search efforts extremely difficult.
So Ben, can you talk a bit about where the plane was found and what details officials have released so far?
So this afternoon, the Coast Guard confirmed that it did locate the aircraft about 34 miles southeast of Nome, out on the sea ice. It announced that rescue teams were able to recover three dead bodies, with seven others still trapped in the wreckage. We expect to get a bit more information at a press conference being held here in Nome tonight. That's going to be organized by the city, and they'll be joined by a few other local officials. And then we got a little bit of information from Senator Sullivan. He tweeted that National Transportation Safety Board Chair Jennifer Homendy will travel to Nome this weekend.
Can you talk a little about the weather conditions in the area at the time that the plane disappeared?
Yeah, I remember going home yesterday around that time. It was really foggy. You couldn't really see very far. There was snow coming down, and it was like that pretty much all day. The Weather Service, their data suggests that the temperatures were in the tens with moderate wind gusts. And the data shows that there was about a mile of visibility. So you really could not see very far.
And officials haven't released the names of the passengers and the pilot on board the plane yet. But do we know anything about who may have been on board?
Yeah, we don't know the names of the passengers. But looking at the route that they took, we may be able to infer some things. The flight took off from Unalakleet, but it made stops in St. Michael and Stebbins before heading northwest to Nome. We don't have official details, like I said, but Bering Air flights coming from the villages typically have people traveling for healthcare in Nome. They may be traveling for work, and oftentimes in a tight-knit community like Western Alaska, they may be going to visit family. It's just too soon to say. Officials have said, though, that all the victims were adults.
And Ben, can you give us a sense of what it's been like in the community today and what type of reaction you're hearing from Alaska officials?
Yeah, I mentioned yesterday that you couldn't see very far. It was snowing. Today is the complete opposite. It's sunny. It's clear. And typically in Nome, that means people would be out and about and kind of taking in the sun. It's not like that today. I think there's a lot of shock still. And I think, like us in the media, you know, we've all been glued to our phones waiting for new information to come in. And then there's also been messages of support from government officials. Senator Lisa Murkowski said, quote, "Our prayers are with all those on the plane missing out of Western Alaska, the Bering Air family, and the entire community of Nome." And State Representative Neil Foster said, quote, "Many thanks for keeping those on board and their families in your prayers." But I think it was Danielle Sem, she's the PIO for the local volunteer fire department, that described it best.
When something happens here in small communities, in the small region that we live in, it hits home. It hits home for everybody, because if you don't know them, somebody else knows them that you know.
Yeah. Well, Ben Townsend is the news director at KNOM in Nome. Ben, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And this is a rapidly evolving story. You can go to alaskapublic.org and KNOM.org for all of the latest developments. President Donald Trump today announced a joint venture with Japan for the Alaska LNG project. If it's built, the $44 billion project would move gas from the North Slope through an 800-mile pipeline to a liquefaction facility in Nikiski for shipment overseas. In a joint news conference with Japanese Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba, Trump said the two spoke, quote, at length about the project, which he said was exciting.
Japan will soon begin importing historic new shipments of clean American liquefied natural gas in record numbers. It'll be record numbers.
The announcement follows talks during Ishiba's first summit with the president. Speaking through a translator, Ishiba said his country isn't just interested in LNG.
As the country of Japan, we are interested in importing not just LNG, but also bioethanol, ammonia, and other resources at a stable price, a reasonable price from the United States. And we also want to improve the trade deficit that the U.S. has towards Japan.
Trump's been a vocal supporter of the Alaska LNG project. On his first day in office, he signed an executive order vowing to unleash Alaska's energy potential, including through the pipeline proposal. But as recently as last week, Alaska lawmakers continued to express concerns about where the money to build the expensive project will come from. A recent study commissioned by the legislature estimated the pipeline alone would cost roughly $11 billion. Alaska Gasline Development Corporation spokesperson Tim Fitzpatrick said today via email, the joint venture revives the two countries' decades-long LNG partnership. Today's announcement came a day after a trio of companies announced their plans to revive and redevelop Marathon Petroleum's LNG facility in Nikiski to an import terminal. That facility was previously used to ship LNG almost exclusively to Japan. Meanwhile, a lawsuit that clouded the future of homeschooling in Alaska for months last spring took on new life Thursday, as the plaintiffs asked a judge to join four school districts as defendants in the long-running case. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
The plaintiffs challenge homeschoolers' use of state funding for tuition at private and religious schools. Under the state's correspondence school program, districts can provide parents with an allotment of up to $4,500 per child per year. That's to purchase supplies, curriculum, and other educational resources. And some programs allow parents to use their allotments at private schools. Scott Kendall is representing the four public school parents and teachers who filed the suit.
So the heart of this case is about students enrolled in homeschool, but nonetheless going to private schools, and essentially the reimbursement of their tuition at private schools being paid with public money.
The plaintiffs argue that practice violates the Alaska Constitution, which says, quote, "No money shall be paid from public funds for the direct benefit of any religious or other private educational institution." Last April, an Anchorage Superior Court judge ruled that the laws enabling the correspondence program did violate the Constitution. But just before the ruling was set to take effect in June, the Alaska Supreme Court put the case on hold and sent it back to the lower court. In an 8-page summary ruling, the justices said that the plaintiffs should have sued school districts rather than the state. That's because districts approve the vendors with whom correspondent students can spend their allotments. Kendall says Thursday's filing responds to the Supreme Court's ruling and looks to move the case forward.
We have found four school districts that are representative of different sort of uses or abuses of the system, and they account collectively for over half of the homeschool students in the state.
The four districts named in the suit are Anchorage, the Mat-Su Borough, the Yukon River community of Galena, and the Denali Borough, all of which run sizable correspondence school programs. Officials in Anchorage and Galena said they were reviewing the case. Palmer Republican Senator Shelley Hughes, who has been a vocal proponent of correspondence education, says she hopes the case will clarify exactly what the state constitution says about spending public money at private schools.
I care about every child and every teacher, and so I don't know who would say no to a child having the best learning environment. If a child is in a particular kind of school that's not working for that child, I think as a state we should support allowing that child to be in a school.
The case is unlikely to be resolved anytime soon. Kendall says he expects a final decision to come from the Alaska Supreme Court. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Anchorage's near-record low snowfall is hurting businesses that normally clear it from the roads.
I guarantee if I was a per-push company, I wouldn't have a shop right now.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You can make a difference in the lives of Alaskans. Every year, hundreds of nonprofits provide warm meals, safe places, and resources to hundreds of thousands of Alaskans. By supporting Alaska's nonprofits when you apply for your PFD, you're giving more opportunity, more hope, more chances. This year, make more possible with the click of a button. Don't forget to give via PicClick Give when you apply for your PFD. This message sponsored by PicClick Give.
The Alaska Senate unanimously joined the State House this morning in urging President Donald Trump to reverse his decision to rename North America's tallest peak as Mount McKinley. Trump issued the order renaming Denali after President William McKinley on his first day back in office, saying he was a, quote, natural businessman who, quote, made our country very rich through tariffs. The decision created an uproar around the state. A public opinion poll found Alaskans opposed the change by a 2-to-1 margin. Senator Scott Kawasaki, a Fairbanks Democrat, says Denali is a name with deep roots in Alaska's history and culture.
Alaskans and travelers from around the world have known it to be Denali. The Athabascan people have lived in the interior for thousands of years, and for thousands of years have embraced Denali as its proper name.
The state of Alaska has called the peak Denali for decades. It renamed it in state maps and databases in 1975 and formally requested that the federal government do the same. The congressional delegation from McKinley's home state of Ohio successfully blocked the change until 2015, when the Obama administration formally renamed it Denali. Some state House Republicans opposed the resolution last month and looked to amend it to include a message thanking the Trump administration for another order seeking to expand resource development in Alaska. But there was no such opposition in the Senate. Here's Minority Leader Mike Schauer, a Wasilla Republican.
I think in the spirit of it, I want to honor what the people of Alaska want in this case. But just the message back to those in D.C. that seem to be looking to change certain things, that's fine. But let's pick something that would be a reasonable thing that would not upset the people of Alaska.
The resolution passed by a combined vote of 50-8. It'll be sent to Trump, Alaska's congressional delegation, the Interior Secretary, and the U.S. Board on Geographic Names. Meanwhile, this time last year, Anchorage was buried in what was the second snowiest winter on record. Multiple winter storms caused roofs to collapse, several school closures, and strained snow crews. But this year, winter looks a lot different. As Alaska Public Media's Ava White reports, a near-record low snow year is putting a strain on businesses that rely on it.
This time last year, Anchorage was buried in what was the second snowiest winter in history. Multiple winter storms caused roofs to collapse, several school closures, and strained snow crews. But this year, winter looks a lot different. Caden Jennings squeezes between a lawnmower and a white truck at his shop in Wasilla. He climbs on the truck bed and unveils a large drum full of loose gravel.
We fill this thing up usually every 2 to 3 sand runs, so it's really fascinating how this works.
Jennings is the owner and operator of Snip and Clip, a lawn care and snow management company that services roughly 110 residential and commercial properties in Anchorage and the Matanuska-Susitna borough. He started servicing lawns in 2022, then bought a plow the following year after nearly 11 feet of snow blanketed the region. According to the National Weather Service, Anchorage has had less than 10 inches of snow since November 1st. Jennings has only plowed 8 times this season, which he says is far less than normal.
And December is usually our killer month where it snows a ton. I want to say last time in December we plowed 7 or 8 times. For this year to be only one time in December, and it was only one time in the valley. We didn't even plow in Anchorage in December. That was kind of where I was like, huh, this might be a little weird.
Snippetclip runs on a subscription basis, and rates start at $175 a month for unlimited plowing. Jennings says the subscription model is the primary reason he's able to keep his business afloat this year.
The subscription model is 110% why we are in business. I guarantee if I was a per-push company, I wouldn't have a shop right now.
Jennings says the lack of snow has prompted a few customers to try to cancel their subscriptions, and the business isn't growing this year like he had planned. Another snow removal business owner, Jacob Bishop, says he's had to dramatically cut his workforce this winter. Bishop owns Be Happy Property Services, a property management and construction company that services roughly 200 properties in the greater Anchorage area. Last year, he had 40 employees who frequently worked 80 to 100-hour weeks to clear snow. He says he's had to lay off a dozen employees. He says the company has been doing more construction work, like home renovations.
We wouldn't pay the bills if we didn't have those other things going on.
Bishop says looking at long-range weather forecasts, he was planning on a below-average snow year, but didn't think it'd be this bad. Be Happy has only plowed 5 times so far this season.
If you would have told me that it was going to be like this winter, I would have been very scared and stressed about it.
Bishop says the company lost money the last 2 years because of the overwhelming amount of snow, plowing over 25 times each season. He says, in that sense, he's able to recoup some of the money he's lost. Bishop says he's concerned about a large snow dump and not having the adequate staff on hand. Snow removal companies aren't the only type of business feeling the impacts of a low snow season. Dana Drummond owns Hoarding Marmot, a new and used outdoor gear store in Anchorage. He says the majority of outdoor gear is sold in the months preceding winter, but January has been slow.
I looked at gross sales this past January compared to last year's January, and I'd say we're down by not quite a third, but almost a third.
Drummond says the sale of new gear has slowed because of the weather, but instead, customers are opting for used gear to try new outdoor activities that they might not have tried before. Hoarding Marmot started renting skis last season, and he says the number of rentals hasn't grown as he was hoping. On the other hand, he says the store has been routinely selling out of ice skates, likely due to the warm weather pattern bringing freezing rain and exposing ice that would normally be covered in snow. He says it's tough as a business owner to be so reliant on something completely out of his control.
There's definitely a bit of anxiety when you've sort of planned around and anticipated what I felt like was a pretty reasonable amount of product and inventory to bring in, especially with our new stuff, and then to find that, like, you know, hey, that ain't happening.
If the city doesn't get any more snow, this winter will go down as the third least snowy on record. The forecast calls for sunny skies and below freezing temperatures for the rest of the week. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Ava White.
The ACLU of Alaska is suing the city of Anchorage over its plan to clear out a homeless encampment in Midtown. The ACLU filed the suit on behalf of 3 homeless residents Thursday, asking a judge to issue a temporary restraining order against the city's plan to abate a camp near Fireweed Lane and Arctic Boulevard on Monday. ACLU spokeswoman Megan Barker says the city's shelters are currently full and officials shouldn't be able to force homeless residents to leave an area when they don't have anywhere else to go.
The municipality's practice of abating encampments without telling people where they can lawfully exist constitutes as banishment. And banishment is a form of cruel and unusual punishment, which is a violation of our state's constitution.
As of this morning, roughly 10 tents and temporary structures were at the encampment with various abatement notices that were posted on January 31st. Barker says the lawsuit also claims that taking property from homeless people at the encampment constitutes an unreasonable seizure and that the campers were not given reasonable notice to leave the encampment.
10 days is not enough time for someone to find alternative shelter or housing, especially given the fact that there is no available shelter space available in the municipality of Anchorage.
In a statement, Mayor Suzanne LaFrance described the abatement as a public safety measure, noting the camp's proximity to North Star Elementary School. According to the mayor, the area around the camp has had a high concentration of police calls, and city officials have removed 8,000 pounds of trash from the camp. She added that the city is following the law and has done 17 camp abatements since July 1st.
Barker says her organization is hopeful that a ruling will come on the abatement before Monday. A similar lawsuit the ACLU filed against the city 2 years ago over its abatement practices is ongoing.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, providing telecommunication services to tribal health organizations and nonprofit rural health providers, enabling telehealth services for Alaskans. More at gci.com/healthcare.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support. Local sponsors do right by their business and for the community by supporting public media stations. Thank you for considering adding your corporate support. You'll be in good company.
After unusually warm weather brought a halt to vehicle traffic on the Kuskokwim River between Bethel and Lower River communities in late January, the official Kuskokwim Ice Road has once again been established on the Lower River. KYUK's Evan Erickson has more.
According to Kuskokwim Ice Road crew leader Mark Leary, the outlook was not rosy when crews headed back out on the river last week with their plow truck, ice radar, and grader to mark and reestablish the route from the Tundra villages up to Akiak.
We had that long stretch of warm weather topped off by that 60-mile-an-hour south wind January 23rd, immediately followed by heavy, heavy snowfall. That's the worst possible thing for ice road.
But Leary says that assessing river conditions is a lifelong learning process.
Past experience has taught us that water won't go away, that it's hiding everywhere under the snow, and it makes it almost impossible to establish a safe road. But the river's always teaching us there's no water.
Leary says that plowing the ice road up the Johnson River, a tributary of the Kuskokwim, to the Tundra villages allowed freight trucks to deliver bypass mail that had been backed up due to flights being canceled for several days. He says it also allowed a critically ill person to reach Bethel.
They needed to medevac, so we made a point of going straight to Nunap. We plowed a road right to the vehicle that they were going to put the patient in, and they brought him to Bethel to get treated.
Leary says the crew also provided plowed access to the Ufok ice fishing area near the mouth of the Johnson River.
Our guys are, you know, they're so happy to get back out on the river. They're like sailors that stay in port too long. They get restless, you know.
Leary says it's been a joy to find a window to reestablish the lower portion of the official ice road, something he says makes life a little easier and more affordable for people in communities along the river.
You know, every time we open the road, we're adding hundreds and hundreds of more potential people to the road. There's like 2,000 people that live back in the Johnson River, and they have, you know, 10,000 relatives in the lower river. So, you see, lots of traffic.
But more balmy weather with temperatures as high as 40 degrees Fahrenheit is right around the corner. As always, the Kuskokwim Ice Road crew will have their work cut out for them. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
The famed Scottish poet Robert Burns once wrote, "My heart is in the Highlands, wherever I go." And there may be a large number of Ketchikan residents who share that sentiment. Every year, the community holds a dinner to honor Burns' poetry and legacy. KRBD's Jack Darrell attended the event to find out why kilts are such a common sight around the rainy southeast town.
Burns' night suppers are held all over the world. They're a way to celebrate the life and lyric of Scotland's beloved poet, Robert Burns. But they're also a celebration of Scotland and Scottish culture. Bill Urquhart helped organize Ketchikan's Burns Night. He's also the one playing the bagpipes.
It's a great chance to, you know, wear a tartan and eat some haggis and break out your favorite bottle of scotch.
Guests of all ages in kilts and tartan dresses take their seats. Tartan is that plaid pattern that you see on Scottish clothing, by the way. Urquhart says Ketchikan has been having regular Burns nights since at least the 1950s. When he's not bagpiping, he's a professor of sociology at the University of Alaska Southeast. He says he spends his life trying to understand group identity and cultures.
You know, the latitude that we're at is actually pretty much even with the Highlands of Scotland. And in the late 1700s and into the 1800s, there was a movement of basically clearing people out and displacing people of the Scottish Highland region.
Burkhardt says a lot of Scots were driven off their land, land they occupied for centuries due to economic change and forced evictions by wealthy landowners. And a lot of them settled in the northern parts of the United States, which is why Urquhart says British Columbia and Southeast Alaska are kind of hotbeds for bagpiping. The tables are lined with candelabras and people pass around aged bottles of scotch. The night is full of ceremony. Traditional songs are sung and Scottish clans honored, and those that have died in the last year. And then the haggis arrives. It's a traditional Scottish dish of sheep's organs and oatmeal, cooked and served encased in the sheep's stomach. Frankie Urquhart, Bill's wife, said they flew this haggis in from Oregon.
It's kind of a big deal. That's Robert Burns, has a poem all about honoring the haggis.
The haggis is served alongside other customary Scottish foods, like neeps and tatties, which is a mix of mashed potatoes and rutabaga, and Scotch eggs. These hard-boiled eggs wrapped in sausage meat and deep-fried, plus crannikin, a traditional dessert of raspberries and oats and cream and whiskey. After dinner comes the drinking. The host for the evening leads a Burns Night tradition, raising a toast to the lasses.
So here's to the lassies, who are smarter, stronger, and far better at remembering the important things.
To the lasses!
To the lasses!
And then his mom returns the favor by raising a cup.
To the laddie.
To the laddie.
And may your spirits stay as strong as your hearts.
Hey, Mike. You want to do a tune on the pipes?
And a bunch of other toasts follow. Then it was time to award the Haggis Mace. The award goes to whoever in attendance most embodies the spirit of Robert Burns. And it's called that because, well, literally looks like a mace, you know, that medieval bludgeon thing, except instead of a spiky ball at the top, it's a 15-ounce aluminum can of haggis. This year, the Haggis Mace goes to local writer and photographer Matt Armstrong.
But tonight we'd like to celebrate Mr. Matt Armstrong.
At the end of the night, everyone joined in a rendition of a very old Scottish song. Auld Lang Syne is sung the world over. You probably know it as that swelling, nostalgic song you sing at the stroke of midnight on New Year's Eve. Robert Burns is widely credited with writing Auld Lang Syne, but Burns said it's older than him. In a 1788 letter to a friend, he said he heard an old man singing it, a, quote, old song and tune, which has often thrilled through my soul. Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind, the song's opening line asks. And everyone, old and young, raised a cup and sang. And in that moment, it was pretty clear that for the tartan-clad guests of Ketchikan's Burns Night, the answer was no. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Ben Townsend in Nome, Eric Stone in Juneau, Ashlyn O'Hara in Kenai, Ava White in Anchorage, Evan Erickson in Bethel, and Jack Darrell in Ketchikan. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Any Fight helped produce tonight's show. And I'm Wesley Early. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Public media is about you, the community we serve. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
Esos besos que te quiero dar, a mí no me importa que duermas con él, porque sé que sueñas con poderme ver. Mujer, ¿qué vas a hacer? Decídete pa' ver si te quedas o te vas. Si no, no me busques más. Si te vas, yo también me voy. Si me das, yo también te doy. Hasta la 10, hasta que duelan los pies. Si te vas, yo también me voy. Si me das, yo también te doy mi amor. Bailamos hasta la 10, hasta que duelan los pies. Con él te duele el corazón y conmigo te duelen los pies. Con él te duele el corazón y conmigo te duelen los pies. Solo con un beso yo te haré acabar ese sufrimiento que te hace llorar. A mí no me importa que vivas con él, porque sé que mueres con poderme ver. Mujer, ¿qué vas a hacer? Decídete pa' ver si te quedas o te vas. Si no, no me busques más. Si te vas, yo también me voy. Si me das, yo también te doy. Hasta la 10, hasta que duelan los pies. Si te vas, yo también me voy. Si me das, yo también te doy mi amor. Bailamos hasta la 10, hasta que duelan los pies. Con él te duele el corazón y conmigo te duelen los pies. Con él te duele el corazón y conmigo te duelen los pies.
¿Quién es el que te quita el frío? ¿Te vas conmigo? Rumbiamos con él, lloras un río. Tal vez te da dinero y tiene poderío, pero no te llena, tu corazón sigue vacío. Pero conmigo rompe la carretera, bandoleras en tu vida y algo que no sirve, sácalo pa' afuera. A ti nadie te frena, la super guerrera. Yo sé que tú eres una fiera, dale, sácalo pa' afuera.
Si te vas, yo también me voy. Si me das, yo también te doy mi amor. Bailamos hasta la 10, hasta que duelan los pies. Si te vas, yo también me voy. Te doy mi amor, bailamos hasta la 10, hasta que duela.
con un beso. Yo quiero acabar ese sufrimiento que te hace llorar.
Did it feel any good? Did it hit you like it should? Was I on your mind? Was I on your mind? Were the lights in your eyes? Did reflections leave you blind? Was I on your mind? Was I? Oh, did you just want to see? Well, I don't want to be right. I want a good life. I want a new truth. I want your fight. Tell me I'm wrong instead. Tell me I'm wrong instead. Give me what I need. Just take my heart. Break my love before you start. Tell me I'm ashes make a sound. Was I on your mind? Was I on your mind? Does it make you feel alive to have something to survive? Was I on your mind? Was I on your mind? Oh, did you think it was free? Just wanna see, but I don't wanna be right. I want a good life. I want a new truth. I want your fight. Tell me I'm wrong instead. Tell me I'm wrong instead. Give me what I need. Just take my heart, break my love, and before you start, tell me I'm wrong instead. Tell me I'm wrong instead. Now every breath feels like a new charade. I'm as lost as you, just stumbling through our separate. I don't wanna be right. I want a good life. I want a new truth. Your fight. Tell me I'm wrong instead. Tell me I'm wrong instead. Give me what I need. Just take my heart, break my love, and before you start, tell me I'm wrong instead. Tell me I'm wrong instead. Tell me. Was I on your mind? Was I on your mind?
I wonder if I'm being real. Do I speak my truth or do I feel to how I feel? I wonder. Wouldn't it be nice to live inside a world that isn't black and white? I wonder what it's like to be my friends. Hope that they don't think I'll forget about them. I wonder, I wonder. Right before I close my eyes, the only thing that's on my mind, been dreaming that you feel it too.
into my hands. I'm conditioned to feel like it makes me less of a man. And I wonder if someday you'll be by my side and tell me that the world will end up alright. I wonder. Before I close my eyes, the only thing that's on my mind, been dreaming that you feel it too. I wonder what it's like to be loved by you. Yeah, I wonder what it's like. I wonder what it's like to be loved by you.
Woke up in my underwear, no liquor left on the shelf. I should probably introduce myself. You should have seen what I wore. I had a cane and a party hat. I
was the king of this hologram, where there's no such thing as getting out of hand. Memories tend to just pop up, drunk pre-meds and some rubber gloves. 5,000 people with designer drugs. Don't think I'll ever get enough. Cocaine, gasoline, and most things in between. I roam the city in a shopping cart, a pack of camels and a smoker load. This night is heating up, raise hell and turn it up. Say it if you go on, you might pass out in a dream fight. Oh yeah,
don't threaten me with a good time.
These footprints, they don't look very human-like. Now I wish that I could find my clothes, bed sheets and a morning rose. I wanna wake up, can't even tell if this is a dream. How did we end up in my neighbor's pool, upside down with a perfect view? Bought a bar at the speed of sound, fancy feet dancing through this town. Lost my mind in a wedding gown. Don't think I'll ever get it now. Champagne, cocaine, gasoline, and most things in between. I roam the city in a shopping cart, a pack of camels and a smoker load. This night is heating up, raise hell and turn it up. Say it if you go on, you might pass out in a dream fight. Oh yeah,
don't threaten me with a good time.
Don't fall when I try to stand. I lost a bet to a guy in a chiffon skirt, but I make these high heels work. I've told you time and time again, I'm not as thick as you drunk I am. And we all fell down when the sun came up. I think we've had enough.
Was enough and it was all in vain. Time starts to pass before you know it, you're frozen. But something happened for the very first time with you. My heart melted to the ground, found something true. And everyone's looking round, thinking I'm going crazy. They try to pull me away, but they don't.
APIA is pleased to announce that our Employment Training and Related Services Division will be traveling to the region in February to share resources and information about workforce development, training, educational scholarship opportunities, the Tribal Vocational Rehabilitation Program, and our child care services. Please stop by and visit our staff in St. Paul February 23rd through March 2nd or contact Kiara Johnson at kiaraj@apiai.org or 907-222-9762 for more information.
This message is brought to you by the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association.
Cause I'm in the stars tonight, so watch me bring the fire, set the night light. Shoes on, get up in the morning, cup of milk, let's rock and roll. Kink out, kick the drum, rolling on like a Rolling Stone.